Apologetics 2, Cornelius Fan 2. I was talking about disagreement with Dr. Mike, and I didn't even voice the disagreement. By the way, you'll have men who are well-read on subjects who will disagree different times. But Sproul, Gerstner, and Lindsley, in their book, Classical Apologetics, they claim that in Romans 1, verses 18 to 22, where Paul says that God has, the invisible God has revealed himself through the visible things he has created, and men have no excuse because they know that God exists, but they suppress this truth. Gerstner, Lindsley, and Sproul say that Van Til teaches that God's revelation of himself in nature does not get through. But I agree with John Frame from reading Van Til and from reading Frame and from listening to lectures by Bonson, and Frame and Bonson are the leading Van Tilian scholars alive today, and they were his students. Van Til did not teach that. Van Til taught that God's revelation of himself in nature gets through. Every man knows that God exists. But man naturally suppresses that truth and lies to himself. That's why Bonson's doctoral dissertation was on self-deception. The heart is deceitful. You know, who can know it? So, Van Til taught that all men know that God exists, but they deceive themselves and suppress this truth. Point number 9, Van Til argues that there is no neutral ground. Stop looking for neutral ground between you and the atheist. Everybody's biased. You're on Christian ground, the atheist is on atheist ground, and you have your own biases, okay? And I think that's a good point. I think we need to look at traditional apologetics more as the testing of biases or the testing of presuppositions, whose presuppositions are true, rather than looking at it as two people becoming totally neutral, throwing away all their biases, and just arguing from this blade of grass to whether or not God exists or not, okay? And I tell you, you get two neutral people come into a debate, and you got a boring debate. You get two biased people who disagree, and you got a good debate on your hands. No neutral ground, all are biased. However, point number 10 about Van Til, and Van Til is so misunderstood on points 8, 9, and 10, we do, though we don't have neutral ground, we're all biased, we do have common ground. Whether we're an atheist or a Buddhist or whatever, we all live in God's universe. Moral values do exist. We all make moral value judgments even if we're moral relativists. We all reason. We all breathe God's air. So we do have common ground. So we can basically test the presupposition of, well, the way Van Til would test it, it's not as clear. They wouldn't come out and say it like that. Schaefer would. That's why he verifies whose presuppositions are true. The way Van Til would probably say it is that just the fact that you're arguing with me, and from me just watching the way you live, presupposes the existence of my God. And so you might deny that presupposition, but you have to presuppose my God before you can even argue against my God. Okay? So it's kind of like the unsaved man has two sets of presuppositions. He has the same presuppositions that the Christian has, but he suppresses those. But Van Til called it borrowed capital. The ones he talks about, presuppositions he talks about, but they're also the presuppositions that he lives by. Van Til called it borrowed capital. Just to live meaningful lives as human beings, they have to borrow some capital, some of the stuff from Christianity, some of the presuppositions of Christianity, just to live like human beings. Okay? An atheist can say we're just an animal, but when his son dies, he buries him with dignity like a human being. But we do have common ground. We all live in God's universe, moral values and reason. Point number 11. For argument's sake, This is almost word for word from Van Til. For argument's sake, Christians can place themselves within the unbeliever's presupposition to show that one has to presuppose the truth of Christianity just to raise an objection against Christianity. Okay? I'll read it again. For argument's sake, Christians can place themselves within the unbeliever's presupposition. You can make a hypothetical situation and say, okay, if your atheism is true, then just to argue against Christianity, my presupposition, you have to presuppose the truth of Christianity just to act like man is an intelligent being who can reason and really be in contact with the things of this world. Okay? Now, Greg Bonson, boy, Bonson is really sharp. Bonson would cringe if he heard this, but I think Bonson, who was a follower of Van Til and was a student of Van Til, I think Bonson is better than Van Til. I think at times Van Til rambled. Bonson is sharp. I wouldn't debate Bonson if they gave me $1 million. But Greg Bonson said he said the same thing, different words. There's no way a person could get moral values or rationality from molecules in motion. If atheism is true, and we're nothing but molecules in motion, then stop calling the butchering of innocent children wrong, because there is no such thing as wrong. Stop saying that 1 + 1 = 2, because there's no such thing as reason if we're just molecules in motion. Everything is just one big accidental blop. Okay? BLOP, exclamation point. Now let me see, what was I thinking? There was something else I was going to say. It was probably profound, but it just passed by. So I guess the Christian church will have to just move on without it. Point number 12. One of the things we have to presuppose, by the way, just to argue, Van Til will admit you cannot reason without the law of non-contradiction. So for the purposes of human reason, we have to assume the law of non-contradiction. However, he believes that by Gordon Clark saying God is logic, he's guilty of idolatry. He believes God is above logic, he is above right thinking, he is above reason, he is above the law of non-contradiction. The law of non-contradiction says that A cannot equal non-A in the same way and at the same time. Okay? If I am a man, I cannot be a man and a non-man in the same way and at the same time. Yeah?
Isn't it the confusion of intrinsic and extrinsic characters of God? Logic flows from God, it's not above God, it's everything.
It's not actually a mistake about those categories that you mentioned. It's a denial that logic fits into there. I think that Gordon Clark is right. Just as God is love, God is also logic. Because, you know, Jesus said, Jesus is God, and he said, I am the way and the truth. And the life. So Jesus is the truth as opposed to non-truth. Well, right there, you've got the whole basis. God is love. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, the word is logos. We get our word logic from it. It means the rational expression of God. So Gordon Clark said, just as God is love, God is logic. I think Clark was right, and Van Til is wrong.
Meaning that if God is above the law of non-contradiction, he could lie, or he could...
Yeah, and Van Til never really touches this a lot and tries to avoid it, but the logical implications of what he is saying, and logic does apply to humans, the logical law... implications of what he is saying, it would be, if God can contradict himself, if God can be above the law of non-contradiction, then the Buddhist can be right when he says that God is and God is not. Okay? So here's where I think Van Til said something. Gordon Clark, by the way, Gordon Clark and him butt heads over and over again. Van Til got Clark not to be, he got his ordination turned down by a certain Presbyterian group, and he got him kicked out of a college, and they wrote nasty letters back and forth, and they argued left and right, but And I bet Van Til was probably even, well, I shouldn't even say that. I was going to say, I bet he was smiling that he outlived Clark, but I wouldn't even. Although there were some people like Pinnock who wrote a joyful letter when Clark died, which I found to be a very ungodly thing to do. And granted, I would not want to. Gordon Clark would be the worst man on earth to debate because he was ruthless in debates. But even though I disagree with him a lot, he was a very godly man. What's that? Well, he basically made you define every term he ever used. Yeah, so he was just. And he'd say, "What do you mean by matter?" And the guy said, "Well, I mean by matter what the physicists mean by matter." And Gordon Clark said, "In the last 2 months, I have read 7 different textbooks on physics, and they all disagreed on their definition on matter. Which view do you hold to? One of those 7, or do you have a different one?" And then he says, too, and the guy said, "Well, I mean, what is solid?" And he says, "Well, the more that physics advances, the more that modern science advances, the less solid things appear. We find there's more and more void space between the molecules." So it's like he's just not a fun guy. He debated a traditional apologist named Hoover, and halfway through the debate, Hoover just stopped talking because every time he opened his mouth, he got slammed. So he just figured, "I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and get out of this place, and hopefully I'll still have my job," you know, that type of thing. But anyway, but Van Til said that God is above logic. I think there was some rambling there. Moreland agreed with me that in apologetics, Van Til was a very intelligent man, but in apologetics he tended to ramble and was trying too hard to protect some of his own contradictions. Point 13, Van Til argued that by inductive you're arguing from the particular to the universal. Inductive argument would argue Socrates is a man, he's one particular. Socrates is mortal, therefore all men are mortal. Well, that'd be a real weak argument, and you'd have to, you know. Now, by the way, this is one of the ones that I changed, by the way, so look real close. Because he doesn't. Clark argues that induction is a fallacy. Van Til doesn't argue that way. Van Til argues that inductive probabilistic arguments, in other words, deductive, you argue from, you say, all men are mortal, Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. Well, if the premises are true, and since the conclusion follows from the premises, it's true with certainty. So they say if we argue for anything less than certainty, we're giving the unsaved man an excuse. Now, what my argument is, finite, limited man doesn't know that God exists with rational certainty. We, in a rational sense, we know it with a high degree of probability or beyond reasonable doubt or with actual undeniability, not with logical necessity. But even there, I mean, I know that this isn't poisoned with a high degree of probability. Now, watch me drop. We make almost all our decisions with a high degree of probability. Okay? But anyway, he argued that inductive probabilistic arguments for Christianity are unacceptable, and that his transcendental argument is the only argument that we should use, the only argument that glorifies God, and it argues for the impossibility of the contrary. Now, if it did prove the impossibility of the contrary, then he would have an argument with certainty, but I don't think it does. He's arguing for the triune God of the Bible and the Scriptures as his inerrant and inspired word. I don't think the contrary to that is a contradiction, is impossible. But that's the way, you know, one brick at a time, arguing inductively, they don't like that, okay? And Van Til does not think that therefore modern science and induction is a whole fallacy. Gordon Clark does. He believes all of modern science, all it is, it doesn't find any truth, just finds a bunch of errors that we learn to work for us. We manipulate nature through science, but we don't really find any truth. because through induction it's a logical fallacy, even if we prove that every man who ever lived that died, died, that doesn't tell us that even one person who's alive is going to die with logical necessity. So Clark says you have to argue with deduction only. Okay? Now, I think, with the exception of the second coming of Christ, we've got very good reason to believe that if Jesus Christ doesn't return to the year 2500, Phil Fernandez is going to die. And so I think inductive arguments can be good, but we need to use inductive arguments tentatively. Yeah.
You can't argue deductive only. It's impossible.
No, it's not.
You begin with
empirical identity as
part of the
deduction. No. What you have to do, though, you have to...
Light must exist.
No. What you have to do, though, and here, if you were right, you would have Gordon Clark in a contradiction, which is like catching Adolf Hitler being kind. What you would have to do, though, since you cannot prove the first principles of reason through reason, because if you could, then they wouldn't be the first principles. The reasons that prove them would be the first principles, but then you'd have to prove them and all. You have to presuppose something, is what Clark argues. And so Clark just dogmatically presupposes. He says, hey, I just dogmatically presuppose the existence of God and his scriptures as God's word. And when I deduce things from the scriptures, it makes sense out of life and morality and that type of thing and blah, blah, blah. But I don't see where his argument that produces any kind of certainty. But you can deduce things, but you have to presuppose something. And then from that, you would deduce everything else. But we'll get to Clark when we get to Clark, which is going to be a lot later than I thought we would get to Clark. Point number 14, this is a point well taken from Van Til. We interpret facts, individual facts, by our presuppositions, not vice versa. Okay, Geisler really takes this to heart. In other words, if you could prove infallibly that Jesus rose from the dead, it is very likely that a real committed atheist is going to say, therefore, there's a law of nature that every 6,000 years, a human being who dies, his body will come back to life. You know, in other words, he'll explain it within his worldview, outside of supernatural terms. Jesus casts out demons, and the Pharisees, who in their worldview believed in God and the existence of demons and the existence of angels, rather than drawing conclusions from the facts, they use their conclusions, or their presuppositions, I should say. They use their presuppositions to interpret the exorcisms that Jesus did as the work of Satan, not the work of God. Okay? Now, one thing that Van Til will not say, but I will say, eventually, when these facts start piling up more and more, an awful lot of people who were atheists, an awful lot of people who were Buddhists, an awful lot of people who were Muslims, eventually, from the weight of it, trying to explain this thing that happened with reference to Jesus and all, and that thing, and trying to explain all those things by their worldview, it gets so complex that after a while, sometimes the weight of all these facts just caves in their presupposition, and they have a Copernican revolution in thought. They basically have a major paradigm shift in thought, to where they replace their old atheistic or Buddhist presuppositions with Christian presuppositions now. Okay? So in other words, I'm saying there is a point when some people, if they are willing, will admit that their worldview does not explain the facts, and then exchange their old worldview for a new worldview. Now let me say this, if you believe that we freely choose Christ, you have to consistently hold that view, if you're going to be consistent in your thought. But if you're a five-point Calvinist, then it's God that gives you the presupposition. I mean, you man has by nature an autonomous presupposition where you are king, and the only way that presupposition gets exchanged in Calvinistic thought is if God regenerates you, which enables you to believe. So you see what I'm getting at? Basically, his theology is determining his apologetics. Okay? But basically, this would be a big slam on John Warwick Montgomery, who, if you can prove Jesus rose from the dead, that proves God exists. Hey, if we live in a chance universe, maybe the molecules just get shuffled around in such a weird way that the highly improbable will occur and some Jewish carpenter arise 3 days after he was crucified. But John Warwick Montgomery even admits to this, even at one point, where he talks about the guy who claimed he went for counseling because he was telling people he was a dead man. And the guy said, "Well, do you believe dead men bleed?" And the guy said, "No, I don't believe dead men bleed." So then the psychiatrist cut the guy, and the guy bled. And the guy looked at the blood and said, "How about that? Dead men do bleed." So instead of changing his worldview, he just changed what he thought was one of the things that he held to as a fact. And but he still held on. In other words, we hold on to our worldviews or our presuppositions more tightly than individual facts, and we try to find a way to interpret those individual facts in light of our worldviews and not vice versa. Okay? But if we understand this basic makeup of man, I think it will help us in our traditional apologetics. But the only footnote I would put there is a point where eventually enough facts that can't really be explained in an orderly fashion within our presuppositions or worldviews could cause us to surrender our worldview and exchange it for another worldview. Point 15, he argued that God's thoughts and man's thoughts do not intersect at any point. What he was arguing here is all our knowledge of God is analogical. And in other words, we get a glimpse, or arrows are shooting towards the truths of God, but they never hit him directly. And Gordon Clark, I think it was well taken, and I don't know how Bonson would respond to this. Bonson is really sharp, but Gordon Clark said, "If God's thoughts and man's thoughts do not intersect at any point, since God knows everything, we know nothing." And Gordon Clark's pretty sharp. He hit the nail right on the head. I think Clark was a better philosopher than Van Til, though I think in some points Van Til's positive apologetic, arguing for Christianity, was stronger than Clark's, but Clark's refutation of non-Christian views was stronger. Yeah, Jeff?
You know, all of our analogical, you have to have something that is, so you have an analogy, you have to have some of the truth in order to have an analogy. So this is a possibility.
Well, basically, all the second point is just saying this, the same thing as the first point. So I've already stated that there is a certain point of, not so much a contradiction, but it's just false. If Christianity is true, the statement is false. But analogical, I don't want to get into. It's just that our knowledge of truth, what we believe is truth, is similar to what God calls truth. Now, I think Bonson tries to argue that Van Til is just saying that we don't exhaustively know any fact. We do know, like Schaefer says, true truth. We do know things truly and certainly, but we don't know it exhaustively. We don't know anything exhaustively. It's not just that we don't know all the facts. Now, if that's what Van Til meant, then he's right. But if that's what Van Til meant, he sure used strange language to try to get that point across, and it sure made it sound like he was saying something other than that. Yeah, Jeff?
What you're saying is we have a finite knowledge of original truth.
I don't know if I would call it an infinite truth, but we, well, yeah, you would probably have to call it, it's an eternal truth, an unchanging truth. You could probably call it an infinite truth, although God is the infinite truth. I think that just God, even a blade of grass, everything there is to know about that blade of grass, God knows it exhaustively. And I would say, in a sense, what you said is true, but I'd have to give it some more time, some more thought. But let's get back to Van Til. At point number 16, he would argue only Christianity gives meaning to life. All other worldviews lead to irrationality and chaos. He would use that as an, I think that's a good argument. What's that? Oh, yeah.
I would have to disagree with you on that one point, because to have a finite knowledge of infinite truth, then you're saying that you only have a finite knowledge of such part of that infinite truth, then it becomes a definite part of that.
Well, yeah, but let's not get into that. It was a cosmological argument, but even the ways that I argued on the apologetics tapes, I was using the Kalam cosmological argument as used by Craig, William Lane Craig, and J.P. Moreland, but I found a fallacy in it. I called up Moreland, talked with him about it. He agreed that it was a fallacy. We discussed several different ways that it could be reconciled. I found out that Norman Geisler already had reconciled it in one of his works. Basically, it is not impossible for there to be an actual infinite set of finites, but they cannot exist outside the mind, because that would generate contradictions. It must exist inside a mind, and since it's infinite, the only kind of mind that could know an infinite number of things would be an infinite mind. And what that tells us is, throughout all eternity, we'll learn more and more about our infinite God, but we'll never have him fully figured out, because we can't even really attain to a fraction of his knowledge. But that just generates, you know, we could talk a whole night on that, but basically what I'm getting, it's impossible for an actual infinite set to exist outside of a mind in the concrete realm, but it is possible for there to be an actual infinite set of finites in the abstract realm, in a mind, but then that mind would have to be an infinite mind, because that's the only place you would have an actual infinite set of finites. And point number 17, scientific induction. Now, this is a major break from the disagreement with Gordon Clark. Gordon Clark, induction, any kind of induction, arguing from the particular to the universal or the general, is a fallacy. So therefore, all of science is a bunch of just manipulating nature, exercising power over nature, and finding falsehoods that work, but you don't find any truth. Well, with Van Til, scientific induction makes no sense in a godless universe. Now, this is a point I think is well taken. But what he's saying is only the Christian God, I would say only the theistic God, guarantees the uniformity of nature. In other words, just the fact atheists try to use natural laws against the possibility of miracles. You know, if I let go of this glass, it's going to drop to the ground. The law of gravity. The reason why things make sense and the laws of nature and the universe works in an orderly fashion, is because a reasonable God created the universe in a reasonable way, so that through reason we can find out about the way the universe usually works. And then every once in a while, God supernaturally intervenes and performs a miracle. But so what Van Til is saying is, there's scientific induction, there's no problem with it, so long as you recognize that it only works if we know that there's an all-good God who isn't fooling us behind the scenes. If there's no God, everything is chance. And just because you drop a book and it falls to the floor, for 365 days out of the year doesn't mean that the next day, the first day of the new year, when you drop that book, it might rise up into the sky, because everything's happening by chance. But maybe there's a deceitful demon who makes you think that it's dropping to the floor, but actually it's an illusion. It's actually rising up to the sky. Or maybe the book doesn't even exist. He's just playing a trick on you. But if the Christian God does exist, then that guarantees that we're not being fooled, and therefore science does have a role to play. But you remove God from science, and we become a bunch of babbling idiots when nothing really makes sense. And it's just like Aquinas argued that mindless things in nature work towards goals, but every time we find things working towards goals, there's a mind that is working those things towards goals. So in other words, there's a mind behind the laws of nature working them towards certain goals. And without that view, it makes no sense at all. We only have a few minutes left. Should I start Gordon Clark, or should I just open it up for discussion on Van Til? Anybody have any questions at all?
Okay, question. Greg Larson, have you written any books?
He's written several books. Most of the stuff that he's done has been papers. But he has written several books. Most of it is on his theonomy. You know, he's a Dominion theologian. He is currently working on several books, and one of them is The Apologetics of Van Til. And the thing is, he was a full-time pastor as well as a professor, and full-time pastors have a very... It's real hard to write and be a full-time pastor. It's not too hard to be a professor and write, so long as you've been a professor long enough to where they cut your teaching hours down to where you can sit around and write all the time. But right now, Bonson, by the way, that's all he does. He's the head of his own school, so all he does is give lectures, write books, debate.
What denomination was
it? Yeah, he's Presbyterian, but don't ask me which kind. There are so many different splits among the Presbyterians that I couldn't tell you which. And a lot of the splits were for good reasons, by the way. But he is a Presbyterian, and as Clark and Schaefer and Van Til. Yeah, he went to Westminster under Van Til. Frame went to Westminster under Van Til, but his book, Apologetics for the Glory of God, by the way, he gives the transcendental argument. He puts it out in that book in about 5 or 6 pages. He words it in as understandable a way as possible, as simple a way as possible, and then he gives reasons why he doesn't like it. So he was taught by Van Til. He knows Van Til's thought, but he's changed Van Til's thought enough to where... But he does correct Sproul, Gerstner, and Lindsley in areas where they misunderstood Van Til. And in his appendix to that book, Apologetics for the Glory of God. Really good book. Really good book.
John Frame, what's
the name? Yeah, John Frame, Apologetics for the Glory of God. Or Apologetics to the Glory of God. Something along those lines. But he's really... See, both Frame and I would view Frame and Bonson as the two leading Van Tilian scholars, or the two leading experts on what Van Til taught alive today. And they both agree on what Van Til taught. It's just that Bonson defends it and believes it, and Frame likes a lot of what Van Til says, but makes enough changes to where he's probably closer to our camp than he is to Van Til's camp in apologetics. Any other questions at all? I think what we'll do, we'll close this lecture early. If we're going to spend 2 lectures per guy, man, we're going to... I don't want to end up making you guys for 4 credits, work on a course until you're 80 years old, but maybe we should have called it advanced apologetics. I don't know. Yeah, Jeff.
Gordon Clark, who's reading
Pretty much a guy with a PhD in philosophy named John Robbins, who publishes Trinity Foundation, who runs the Trinity Foundation, which publishes all of Gordon Clark's works. And by the way, man, I wish I could get there. I wish IBD had the funds. In November, the national meeting of the Evangelical Theological Society is held in Philadelphia, and the whole subject is Christian apologetics. Some of the keynote speakers, are going to be Moreland and Habermas. Craig is going to be there presenting a paper. Geisler is presenting a paper. John Warwick Montgomery is presenting a paper. But also, Robbins, the Clark, is the Clarkian philosopher, is presenting a paper defending Clark's apologetics. And Bonson is presenting a paper defending Van Til. And I just hope they keep the two apart. And then, in the meantime, when the traditional apologists get up there to present their papers, then they got to keep those guys. I mean, there's going to be some heavy debates, some heavy questioning, question and answer periods after those papers are presented. It's just going to be intense.
Do you want the tapes to be available? I know they were last year.
Yeah, they'll be available for about $7-$8. Yeah, in fact, that would be a good idea. You're talking about. God bless you, dear Karen. You're talking probably about probably at least 100 papers. So you're talking about maybe $700-$800. I wouldn't get them all. I just get the ones from there are some good solid theologians like Miller J. Erickson, whose reasoning is real good, but most of the theologians ramble a lot, and the sharpest papers are usually the papers either put out by the Evangelical Philosophical Society or Christian historians and Christian philosophers who present their papers in other areas. They would be the best papers. So in other words, you do get some theologians who don't reason too well at times, and sometimes they're not arguing for a position. They're just stating their view, but they're not really going to argue over. But for what we're doing, as far as biblical defense, apologetics, and that type of stuff, there's probably at the tops 15 audio cassettes that I would think would be worth our while and getting. So it would be well within. Reason, like Winfried Cordovan has got to present a paper that would be interesting to read, but Geisler, Habermas, Craig, Moreland, Bonson, Robbins, those would be the Montgomery. Those would be the top seven right there that I'd want to get my hands on. I'm not really sure. The guy's he's authored over 40 during his life. And but he also has he's very good, very smart, and he's just like Bonson said, he considered Montgomery much more having the academic qualifications, so he was more serious of an apologist when refuting him than Sproul or Schaefer, whose doctorates were honorary, and his PhD is in history, Montgomery, which he's an evidentialist. He uses history to argue for Christianity, but at the same time, it is somewhat of a Neanderthal-type traditional apologetics in that it's pretty much, I can prove with a high degree of probability that Jesus rose, therefore God exists. Even Geisler points out, if you can prove that Jesus rose, but you didn't already prove that God exists, then all you did was prove that there was just another meaningless fact in this chance universe. So, God bless you, John. So, and Habermas also argues from the resurrection for the truth of Christianity, but he openly admits that it does seem to shed some light on Jesus' world, the truth of Jesus' worldview, which is theism, But he strongly recommends arguing for theism first, like Geisler does, and then arguing for the resurrection. But, you know, when your PhD's in history, you don't want to get too bogged down with philosophical argumentation. So,
how do you join the Evangelical Philosophical
Society? No, you could join it as a student, and they would even give you a discount, since students don't usually have as much money as professors. I think it would cost you something like $15 or $20 a year, and then you get all their journals. But I think you have to, the guy has to sign. Didn't I get you that form once where
I
signed?
I heard, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and that was founded by Geisler, by the way, the Evangelical Philosophical Society. Although Geisler has kind of abandoned it a little bit. Craig, Moreland, Habermas, those guys love it. You know, it's there's not a whole lot, by the way. God bless you there. So there, you're talking about when you show up to their national meetings, there might be 200 or 300 theologians and 15 philosophers. So when you attend those talks, the national ones, you'll be sitting down in a room with 15 guys, and 12 of those guys are some of your favorite authors. And they're all arguing left and right, just dynamite. In San Francisco, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I got to argue a little bit with Craig. I got to the point, me and Craig were arguing in a nice way. Craig is a great guy. And Winfried Corduan overheard us arguing in the hall, and he said, Phil, I could hear what you're saying all the way down the hall. You know, stuff. So after we went out for Chinese food and argued all night on Calvinism, and it was just great. We were some really super guys. Craig is real friendly. Habermas is real friendly. Corduan is real friendly. Moreland is a great guy.
Craig in his book argued a lot for Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And especially on those things, Bill Pace is all on Elizabeth.
Yeah, but he will argue for God's existence first, and then he will move to argument, and that's what Geisler does. Montgomery doesn't. In his works, he argues just for from history, for the truth of Christianity. And I think you can make a case that it's such a freak event that it does seem to lend credence to Christ's worldview. But the fact remains, if you haven't proved God's existence in a godless universe, all you just proved is another meaningless chance event in a chance universe.
That's why Geisler's so thorough.
Yeah, and Geisler told me if he had to do it over, he would have wrote the first section last and stuff. I told him no, even though it's because most people do not get through the first one third of his book, Christian Apologetics. I told him no, you left no stone uncovered, and you basically built upon the founder. The first one third of the book of Geisler, it's how do we find truth? The second one third is after finding the right proper test for truth, which worldview is true, and then after finding theism is the true worldview, then he argues which theistic religion is true, and then he argues from historical evidences for Christianity. We'll go over that when we get to Geisler. We should have a lot of fun with that. Hopefully next week we'll get through Clark and Schaefer, and then we'll do Geisler, and then we'll go back to arguments. We'll refute atheism, arguments for God's existence and creation science, things like that, and then we'll give historical evidences for the Christian faith and that type of thing. Alright, that's about it, dear.
Can I ask you back on that?
Sure.
Number 12, when you're saying God is above logic, I got flattered it out, but something you were saying towards the beginning, you started to say the purpose of arguing beauty, and then I just lost it.
Dan Till is just saying that human reason necessitates the law of non-contradiction and the rules of logic, the principles of logic. But he says to say that those rules also apply to God is to put those rules above God. But myself and Gordon Clark, and I think even Geisler would agree with me, we would say, no, we're not putting logic above God. We're saying that the standard is not above God. God is the standard. And so right thinking comes from God. God is truth, and so anything that contradicts him is falsehood. And so the law of non-contradiction was just, it's not like Aristotle invented it or man invented it. And Vantil wouldn't even say that. Vantil would say probably that God created us in such a way that we have to use these principles of logic to reason, but don't put those laws above God. Well, nobody's putting them above God except maybe, you know, idiots. But it, just as God is love, love is not above God. God is good, good is not above God. God is logic, logic is not above God. A lot of it is done in an attempt to really glorify God, but we glorify God with the truth, not with statements that would lead to absurd conclusions, such as it would be possible then for God to both exist and not exist, which Vantil would never say, no, would never admit to that possibility, but I don't see how he could. Once you say God, the law of non-contradiction doesn't apply to God, then anything goes. All right.
Let me know when you get that picture.
Oh, yeah, I've got it, definitely. Theology 2 and then the ethics test. If you find the ethics test, give me a call.
Well, I've got it at home. You don't need to do it. I'm
you do have it at home?
I'll just do it in front of my wife.
Okay.
That'd be great. A program that I've written?
Oh, okay.
You have access to it if you see it.
All I have is Macintosh.
You have a Macintosh?
Yeah.
I can probably write them for a Macintosh. Be a little more hard to, harder to get it to you, but...
What is it?
Oh, this is most interesting. What it tries to do is basically selects a target word. For example, if you just execute it by itself, mm-hmm. it tries to type evolution by randomly selecting whether it will be off of that.
Mm-hmm.
And a mathematician calculated it to be like 5 trillion.